This is Bill Tiller of Tiller.org. You're listening to BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr. And tonight I have Michal Ledwith, and we're going to, he was the author of the Orb Project, but he also knows a lot more about Rene Le Chateau, Jesus, Mary Magdalene, and we're going to talk about that. And I'm not as learned on it as I should be, so he's going to help me out tonight.
None of this is either.
When I fall down, but anyway, he's got a lot of information that I'm interested in and hope you will be too. Welcome, Michal. How are you?
I'm great, Eva, and it's really wonderful to be back with you again. I completely enjoyed our last interview.
Oh, thank you. Well, I do have a list of about 10 or 12 questions that I want to ask.
I hope I know some answers.
If I start falling down, you got to help me fill in the
There's
gaps.
There's no falling down on this program.
Okay. One of them I want to ask you about before we start getting into Jesus and biblical texts. I want to go back to our last interview about quantum mechanics and things. What do you mean when you say that in the quantum field, real effects come before the cause sometimes?
Well, what I'm trying to do there is to spell out something that has been hidden from us for millennia, and that is how great the power all of us, however humble, even a wino under a bridge, as I spoke about in one of my articles recently, has. Jesus expressed it. It's in the Gospel of St. John. He said, if you want something, if you pray for something, you've got to believe that it is already yours. And if so, it will be so. So in other words, if I say, want to manifest in my life a remarkably wonderful and meaningful relationship, or if I want to manifest in my life a fair level of wealth or something, whatever, the key in the quantum world is to know that when you focus on the quantum field, which is the sixth level of the electromagnetic spectrum, when you focus on that field, whatever your focus is going to affect that quantum field. And it's like a waterfall. You know, from the sixth plane down to the fifth, fourth, third, down to where we are, it cascades down the various intervening levels. And I don't think it was ever expressed as well as the way Jesus expressed it when he said, believe it is already yours and it will be so. So if I want something, this wonderful relationship, whatever, I absolutely have to get into the state of feeling, believing, walking, talking, sensing, knowing that it is already mine. If so, that is impacting the quantum field.
Okay.
Now, the great disservice, Eva, that was done to us down the centuries, particularly by the religions, is that we were told the opposite of that. In other words, if I want something from God or from Jesus, incidentally, you know, I came across a survey that was done in Italy recently of who people looked to or looked for help from when they were in trouble or wanted something, and Jesus came sixth.
Really?
Anyway, you know, we've been taught that when you want something, you have to beg, you have to ask, you have to implore, you have to tell God how miserable you are, how unworthy you are, how great a sinner you are. And you try to cajole God into some sort of state of mind where God will give it to you. Well, now, of course, that, as you probably have looked at some of my articles on my website, hamburgeruniverse.com today, but you will see that that manifests exactly what we do not want to have. And that's why most of the great self-help programs that we've heard so much about in recent years, including The Secret, The Law of Attraction, etc., usually fail or at least disappoint in the sort of results we would hope to have.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're aware of quantum mechanics and quantum physics, we know that to manipulate the quantum field, we have to already be the result that we want to have accomplished. We do not beg, ask, implore, beseech, or pray for it, because then we are just signifying that it is absent from
us,
and all that manifests is the absence.
Okay, one more short question, then I want to get into the other stuff. But if you pray, I just want to find peace. I just want to have this. I just want to have that. Do you think you, if you, do you get the desire of want or do you get the things?
No, you get the desire of want because that is what's in your focus.
That's what I thought. Okay.
No, I had, I don't know if you got to one of those articles I wrote maybe 6 or 7 months ago. I know there were.
I've been trying to read them all.
Very unhelpfully, Eva, when you asked me today, give me some pointers here. I very unhelpfully said, look at, there's about 30 articles of mine on my website recently. And look through those and see if something catches your fancy. But in one of those articles, I told a story that was really very sad for me many years ago. It was a young woman at the stage I'm talking about. She was about 32 years old. She had a wonderful husband. She had two beautiful daughters. And she got breast cancer. And I went to visit them because I was a close family friend. And she said to me that evening, you know, I can't understand how this happened to me. And unfortunately, she died of the cancer. She said, when I was 8 years old, my mother got breast cancer. And every morning and every night, I have prayed to God since then to not get breast cancer. And she said, now I have it. And she said, how could that be? How could God do this? Well, I said, you know, the way you're thinking of God is not the way God actually is. God is not an old man with a beard in the cloud looking down on you and waiting, you know, to respond to you like a human being would, but a human being enlarged. I said, we have to realize that God, the Godhead, the source, the creator, is channeled through us. And if you want to manifest something, it's important to realize that what you focus on is what will manifest. And I said to her, you know, as gently and over a long period of time that evening, I said to her, you know, how could you have avoided getting cancer? Because your focus was on cancer, morning, noon, and night, since the day your mother died.
Right, right.
So that's why we often, I think what I called that article was manifesting what it is we oppose.
Right. I understand that. It makes a lot of sense to me, anyway. Right. One more question, but this is moving on into your other topic, but it's not something that I saw on your website. It's something someone told me.
Okay.
Someone told me they were reading the work of some biblical historian the other day. I can't remember who it was or what the person's name was that was doing the historical work, but they said that they had somehow come up with a wanted poster by the Romans back in biblical days that was describing Jesus when they were looking for him as being short, somewhat hunchback, and bald. Have you ever heard about that?
No, I haven't. I've heard most things, but I've never heard that. Number one, there were no wanted posters in the days of Jesus because most people couldn't read. Number two, there was no need to look for Jesus. He went about publicly everywhere. He was notorious. I mean, he got 5, 6, 10,000 people at a hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So why would they put out a wanted poster?
I don't know. I'd never heard that before, and I thought it was strange.
No. He was about 6 feet tall, and he certainly wasn't short and bald.
Okay, now let's move in. I'd like to talk a little bit about the Dead Sea Scrolls, the tomb in Rennes-le-Château, and, of course, Mary Magdalene. So,
right, sure.
Then somewhere along the time, I'd like to talk to you about, I don't know if you, have you read Gerald Schroeder's book, The Science of God?
No.
He's a theologian, but also an MIT physicist in Israel, and he talks about how Eden and well, how Adam and Eve were formed, and he also says something very interesting that there were somewhat humanoids before Eve that mated with Adam's, and that's why some people don't have the spirituality that other people have, that there's less soul there, and it's very interesting. You know, it's his perspective, so I wondered if you had heard about that.
I haven't heard about George Schroeder. I have not heard about his book. But of course, in the Jewish tradition, that's not in the Hebrew Bible, but it's in the parallel tradition, like in the Zohar, they do tell about a previous wife to Eve, which Adam had,
mm-hmm.
and Lilith, and she, of course, became demonized, etc., etc., etc. So I think, you know, I actually was working on an article about something related to this, you know, this whole vexed question about the world being 6,000 years old, which a lot of our friends firmly believe in as an article of the faith. But
you mean the Jews believe it or everybody?
No, I don't think the Jews believe it. I don't think anyone believes that. There's a certain fundamentalist brand of believers who believe that the world was made in the year 4004 BC. You know, what I wrote in this article was, gee, heavens above, you know, if this was such an important issue, why didn't Jesus say something about it? Why didn't the fathers of the church who came right after him say something about it? Why didn't the early medieval theologians say something about the age of the world, or the high medieval theologians like Augustine, like Aquinas, like Don Scotus, or Scotus or Eugena? Why didn't Martin Luther say it? Why didn't Zwingli or Calvin say it? None of them say a word about the age of the world. Nothing happens until about the middle of the 1600s when John Lightfoot in Cambridge, and the one who's most famous about it all, James Usher, said, when they added up all the ages of the people mentioned in the Bible, that the world was 6,000 years old. They even put a time of the day for it.
Well,
in September 4004 BC. So now this has become something that's, you know, let down from heaven by God. And there are people in this country, millions of them, who believe this is such an important issue that they go into a frenzy if you suggest that there were dinosaurs 65 million years ago.
I hate to say this stupid thing now, but did you hear my cell phone just come on?
What?
My cell phone was turned off.
Right.
And it's done this one other time, and it's when I was interviewing Gary Schwartz, and we were talking about something very important like this.
Okay.
And it just turns on.
Okay.
It was the weirdest thing. It's only done it one other time in my life, and that was with Gary, and it just did it with you.
Okay, well, we'd have to keep down the intensity then.
Right.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Anyway, it kind of disrupted me.
No, that's all right. That's a good sign.
So, do you think that the Garden of Eden and Adam, was it really real like it was, or was it just an analogy or parable?
Oh, no. Well, you know, the thing is, Eva, those documents, I'm talking about the book of Genesis now, where Adam and Eve are mentioned, obviously. The book of Genesis was written about the middle of the 8th century before Christ. So we're talking about a document that's nearly 3,000 years old. Now, I say to people, it would be the ultimate absurdity for you and I to believe that I could take up a document from that distance in time, and not just in time, but from an entirely different culture. The ancient Near Eastern culture is as far as could be imagined from the culture that you and I live in today. The ways we express things, the way we think about things, so different it's almost impossible to bridge the gap. But if we think we can take up a document that was written 3,000 years ago, and read it like we would read the Washington Post or the New York Times, you are living in cloud cuckoo land. So I think, you know, when the biblical authors wrote about Adam and Eve, they were writing about something that was true. But the ways in which they communicate are vastly removed from the way you and I would go about doing that. And as a result, everyone now thinks that God made the world, you know, in a particularly busy week 6,000 years ago. And finally, after his sixth day of creation, when he made Adam and Eve, he rested on the seventh, and heaven knows he really deserved it after making those two. So, I mean, it's mixing up very sophisticated material with very, very childish understandings of it. So, was there a Garden of Eden? Yes, indeed there was. Did the gods, the gods create these people? Yes, they did. Were they the first kind of life on the planet? No, they were not. Are they our ancestors? Yes, they are. So, I mean, this is a huge subject. If you really wanted to research this, you would look at those old scrolls, not from the Dead Sea, which you mentioned earlier, but much, much more ancient ones. From Babylon and Sumer, you know, that fertile crescent of Mesopotamia where all the trouble is today as it was then, back in those years. where you'll find those stories about the gods who came and did all sorts of things on this earth, and they genetically engineered a lot of people. That doesn't in any way conflict with God, the creator, the origin of all. But, you know, there are some people who would look upon us as gods today, mm-hmm. in a very mistaken way. I always refer back to something that happened in World War II down in the island of Papua in New Guinea, where there were American soldiers flying in supplies to their own troops down in the South Seas, and they spotted in the jungle underneath the supply planes a group of people who apparently were unknown to what we call civilization, quote-unquote, and they thought it would be interesting if they had some of the crates of food they were dropping in. If they had one left over, they would drop down a crate of food by parachute to them with supplies and clothes, etc. And, of course, the native peoples were absolutely delighted. Now, anyway, the war ended, of course, and then there were no more planes, even though they'd been dropping food in for about 6 months. And there were no more aircraft flying overhead, no more gifts, no more parachutes. So the local people down in the jungle clearing, who had never made any contact with Western civilization, they began to erect shrines to the aircraft that flew overhead. They made idols in the shape of the aircraft. They draped the shrines with the parachute silk, asking the gods to return. It's called the cargo cult. I mean, it's still alive today. And I think, you know, that it's so easy for any civilization of primitive people, as we all were at some point in time, to think that people with a more sophisticated technology and the greater abilities than we can imagine, that they're actually supernatural beings. Now, there is a supernatural being. There is a God who is the source of all creation. But the point is that there have been an awful lot of individuals and interventions down through the years that have passed themselves off as God to primitive people who knew no better.
I want to do something while we're here in the middle of all this, because I failed to do it when we first tuned in. You were a bishop in the Catholic Church?
No, I wasn't, no. No,
what
I
were
was
you?
a humble priest.
A priest, okay.
Yes.
But you've spent your life, you know, studying this and researching this. You're not just coming on the air talking. I mean, you're basing everything you tell me on factual research that you've done or studying, so
yes.
People will understand that.
Yes, I was a professional theologian. I was a professor of theology at university level for 16 years. I was in academic administration, and in the last 10 years before I retired, I was president of the university. So that's my background.
Okay.
I was also a member of the International Theological Commission, which is a group that advises the Holy See, the Vatican, on theological matters. I was a member of that for 3 separate terms in the days of Pope John Paul for 17 years. So that's my background. No, none of what I'm saying to you I'm tossing off the top of my head. Believe me, I never make a statement until I'm absolutely sure of my ground and I've done my research.
It's very interesting information that you're sharing. Another question I've always wondered about, and still I hadn't gotten into your website information, is how did so many people evolve from only 2 people? Were they the only 2? Were there other were they just the ones that our Bible as we know it focused on? Were there other tribes somewhere in the world? I mean, how did so many people come from?
Well, that's a very good question. But let me pose you a parallel question. I'm not dodging your question. I'm just amplifying it a little. Who did Cain and Abel marry?
Very good point.
That they were the children of Adam and Eve, right?
Yeah.
And they apparently, there was only 4 people in the world.
Right.
So who did Cain and Abel, who were both male, who did they marry to carry on the race? Now, this is what I say to biblical fundamentalists who, you know, tell me that they know everything that happened, what, when, and where, and that there were only 2 people in the beginning, and that everyone descended from Adam and Eve. Well, okay, Adam and Eve had 2 sons, Cain and Abel, and the whole human race is supposed to have descended from them. Now,
yeah,
who
Eve
did
was
those
an
two
awful
critters?
Busy woman.
What?
Eve had to be an awful tired woman.
So, yeah, So in other words, instead of going down the garden path with those people who asked those questions, I asked them to face up to the facts here. And you tell me, who did Cain and Abel marry if there were only four people in the entire earth?
So what do you know about that, the population of the earth, if anything?
Well, I think, there are many races on this earth. They all came from God in one way or another. That's, no one's denying that. But the situation is far more complicated than, you know, these simplistic pictures that people who are so savage, you know. Have you ever noticed that the people who claim to be followers of Jesus Christ, who preach the message of love and forgiveness, that they're so savage?
Oh, yes, I've been one of them before.
You what?
That's the way I grew up. I was one of those people in my childhood. So was my family.
Well, you know, a lot of people in that category, they find themselves in the curious position, of a rather curious position, of preaching and practicing hatred in the name of the God of love.
Exactly.
Don't you think there's something wrong there?
So, what about the other wife of Adam? What do you know about that? I mean, I just know that what Jerry wrote in his book, and by the way, you brought up the 7 days. He puts forth some very interesting physics about those first 7 days, that even though they might be 7 days, they weren't 24 hours. Each day turned out to be several billion years. And he talks about how the expansion of the universe. It's real interesting. You ought to look at it. But anyway.
Yeah, well, of course, those ideas have been tossed around since the beginning of the Christian era. I mean, if you look at any of the fathers of the church, if you look at Augustine, if you look at Irenaeus or any of those back then, they all suggested that those figures were metaphorical, mm-hmm. and that they could be much, much greater, you know, than the typical 24-hour period. I don't know anyone who in those days believed that the world was created in 144 hours, which is 7 24-hour days.
Right.
So, these questions are very old. They've been looked at before, and nobody in the beginnings of the church believed that the world was made 6,000 years ago. Nobody. It was invented by an Irishman, a Dublin-born man, James Usher, a theologian, who counted up all those ages in his study and to his own satisfaction worked out that the world was created in September or whatever it was in the year 4004 BC at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Interesting.
Interesting, but yeah. Absurd. I used to keep Eva on a shelf above my desk when I was a professor. I had an original copy of James Usher's book published in 1650, and I kept it all over my desk to remind me of how mad displaced theological interest can be.
It's crazy.
Crazy. And you know, it's messed up so many people today. I mean, it wouldn't matter if nobody paid any attention to it, but there's so many people today who are absolutely...
It's wars over it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these are the sort of beliefs that, you know, that cause wars and cause people to get killed.
Right. And families to denigrate. And, I mean, my family, when I started being the way... I don't want to get off on me, but I want to say focus on you, but they thought I was of the devil when I started.
Oh, yes, of course, the devil.
Enlightenment.
No, Jesus never talked about the devil.
Right. So, back to Adam and Eve, well, Adam's first wife. Where is their information about that?
The Zohar, Z-O-H-A-R.
Okay.
It's an Old Testament period Jewish book. It's very easily available.
Okay.
It's not in the Hebrew Bible. That book was banished from the Bible.
Okay.
By the Jews, by the way, not the Christians.
Yeah, a rabbi told me, I live next door to an Orthodox synagogue.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I was talking to him about enlightenment and what had happened to me, how I had a medical intuitive ability. He said, you know, he didn't believe me at first, wouldn't talk to me.
Oh, really?
And then one day he decided to let me prove it to you. So when I did, he finally looked at me and he said, okay, I believe you. He said, but you seem to know how to use it with love. But it was actually in the original Bible of the Jews, but the rabbis took it out because people were using it to hurt one another,
mm-hmm.
the ability.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I want to know, do you think Jesus was born of a virgin? Do you think he married, and do you think he had children? Is there any evidence surrounding any of that? the bloodline. Tell me about the bloodline.
Okay. Now, that's three questions.
I thought I could squeeze them into one.
Incidentally, by all means, I mean, you can do whatever you wish. Now, let me tell you a little story by way of this. I did an interview a couple of years ago for the editor of a Protestant magazine who regarded itself as extremely radical and left-wing. And at the end of the interview, he said, "Do you think that Jesus was married, or do you think if he was married, that would detract from his divinity?" Well, I said, I'll answer your question, but first I want you to answer a question for me. What despicable attitude towards the female and towards women lies behind your question, that you think contact with a female person would be noxious to your divinity? Why don't you say, would contact with a male person be disastrous for your divinity? Why do you pick on the female? And of course he had no answer. But there's hidden behind those issues that matter so much to people, there is hidden, you know, an absolutely retrograde assessment of the female. That's the source, you know, it goes right back to Eve, as you say, who was tempted by the serpent, and who then in turn tempted Adam, and then the original sin was committed, and after that, for the rest of ages, we're all in sin because of the woman. Now, if you go back to the Sumerian texts that are much more ancient than Genesis, from which the Genesis texts emerge, you'll find that it wasn't the woman who sinned at all. Anyway, so this is the thing. I'm not answering your question directly, because to answer them, I'd have to buy into that prejudice against women, and I need to clarify that first.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the text that you mentioned there at the start, you mentioned the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Dead Sea Scrolls, of course, were earlier than the time of Jesus. They say nothing about Jesus whatsoever. But the texts that are not too far removed from them that say an awful lot about Jesus were discovered in a place called Nag Hammadi in Lower Egypt in 1946. And they're called the Coptic Writings. They were found in the burial ground of the 6th dynasty pharaohs, which would be about the middle of the 2nd millennium BC. And they were looking for fertilizer, the Arabs who were digging there. And they found this huge jar sealed with bitumen. And inside there were books, not scrolls now. They were books. They were dated later, the actual copies were dated to the middle of the 300s or the late 200s. Now, they were brought home by the man who found them, and he placed them beside the wood stove in his house, his mother's house. And his mother, even though this will be denied nowadays by the Egyptian authorities, his mother used some of the documents to light the wood stove the following morning. Nothing burns as well as 1,800-year-old manuscripts. But anyway, 52 of them survived. And they're called the Coptic Gnostic Gospels, and they have a lot to say about Jesus and his life and his association with Mary Magdalene, etc.
Was Jesus a rabbi?
No.
He wasn't?
No, he wasn't. You know, a lot of people say Jesus had to be married because he was a rabbi. Jesus was not a rabbi.
That was going to be my question.
No, Jesus was a radical. I mean, he was outside of the traditional Jewish authoritarian religious structure entirely.
Now, how do you know that? From what? Just because people will argue it, and I don't have any idea.
But how can they say that? Where's the evidence that he was? I mean, he was an itinerant preacher. The rabbis were not itinerant preachers in the first century. They were associated with the temple and the synagogues. Jesus wasn't based in any synagogue. He wasn't assigned a parish in that sense.
Well, that's true.
He wandered around everywhere. Where was he, by the way, for more than half of his lifetime, between the ages of 12 and 28? Where was he? There's not a word in the New Testament about it.
That's true.
Now, isn't that something? Because that's more than the rest of his entire life.
So, do you know where he was?
He was in India and Tibet.
Doing what?
Studying with the masters, which is what he came to do.
Oh, okay, that's logical. Okay, that makes sense. For him to have the abilities he had to learn from a master.
He had those abilities. I mean, all the miracles that are told in the Gospels, he did do those things. And what he came to do was not to suffer and die for our sins. He came to teach us how to do the same, to bring out the potential that's in each and every one of us.
I've never understood that dying for our sins thing.
Oh my God!
If
you look, at one of my DVDs, it's a very long DVD, two-part DVD, How Jesus Became a Christ. Did I send you that ever?
No.
No, I will do that the next day or so.
Oh, thank you.
But if you'll see, I think it opens up there. Someone told me it was now available on Google to view the trailer. But I said, you know, unfortunately, it's become impossible nowadays to think of Christianity or of Jesus himself in any terms other than the suffering Savior. You know, Mel Gibson did a terrible disservice to the message of Jesus with that movie of his a couple of years ago, The Passion of the Christ, because that's all it was reduced to. You know, the blood-soaked Savior who struggles up this hill of Calvary to die for our sins. And all that succeeds in inculcating is guilt and fear of God's punishment and all we did to Jesus and all we did to God. And the only thing we can do is demean ourselves and say how miserable and worthless we are. And of course, back to your question at the start, if you understand the quantum field, you can understand what that mentality is doing to our lives.
Well, I told you I'd keep you posted on time since we have a lot that we want to talk about. It's 10:30, so we got 25 minutes. Still want to know about Jesus and Mary, if he was a virgin. Also, I'd like to know, what about Revelations and the Rapture in 2012, from the perspective of what you know from your life studies, and aliens? Is there anything anywhere that discusses any of that from the biblical perspective? Well, from a what's the right word, Neil? I don't even know.
Well, could I suggest, not putting you off at all, but I wrote an article in August.
Which
is on my website about aliens.
It was so much information, everything at one time, I couldn't get it all.
Well, the title was, How Can Little Green Men Be Made in the Image of God?
Right.
And my point was, you know, the new Vatican astronomer, the head of the Vatican Observatory, made a statement, I think it was in June or July, saying, you know, it's okay to believe in aliens, it doesn't conflict with belief in God. And I started off the article by saying, I haven't the foggiest idea what he's talking about. How could belief in aliens conflict with belief in God? But anyway, I went on through that article to point out other beliefs that are held by churches that will be shattered to their core if there's ever evidence produced that aliens exist. And I said at the end, I think the Vatican astronomer, you know, shouldn't worry about whether belief in aliens affect belief in God. What he should be worried about is every other belief that the church has will be shot out of the water by that fact.
Yeah, how is the church dealing with the thing about Mary and Jesus and Mary?
Well, I think they're just battening down the hatches and, you know, hoping for the storm to pass. But, you know, I think this time the storm is not going to pass.
How did they deal with you? How did they treat you when you started teaching all
this? That's another story. Not well. Not well. No, the techniques of repression have always been to work at undermining people indirectly, to trying to discredit them, and if they discredit the person, of course, then they do not have to discredit the message because it's all taken care of.
Right.
So that's as old as time itself. So we don't need to go into that, but. You know, the thing is, I am very saddened by the unwillingness of the religions to change. Because they say they're in charge of our immortal destiny here in this life. They tell us that we are all children of God, as Jesus taught, which is absolutely correct. But you know, if we decide to act like children of God, then we are come down upon with a ton of bricks.
Talking about, you just made me think about something else. Ascension. You talked in one of your articles about Jesus ascending. How do you know that? And is there a description of what happened when he ascended anywhere, other than the one that's in the King James Bible or whatever?
Well, yeah, it's in all Bibles. I mean, the King James is just one of the principal, the first English translations of the Bible. A lot of people feel the King James Bible was written by God personally, and that God speaks Elizabethan English with thees and thous, shouts and all that stuff. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. The ascension, you know, in traditional religious terms, is that Jesus went up onto the Mount of Olives, and he was transfused into light and disappeared in an upward direction from the earth, like going up in an elevator. Now, ascension is a real thing, and it happens when the various elements that make up you and I mean, I went into this quite a lot in connection with the phenomenon of orbs, which you and I discussed the last time I was on your program. And I was speaking in Glastonbury in England about this last July. And what I said was there, you know, that it's not enough to take an enormous number of pictures of orbs. I have probably the largest collection in the world. I did not realize how large until last month when it crashed my computer. But when we were downloading them, I found that on this computer, which has about two-thirds of my collection, there was over 250,000 pictures of orbs. So it would be, you know, ridiculous to just keep on taking pictures of orbs and their various kinds without asking, what did they tell us? What did they tell us about me? How am I made up? And what kind of a universe am I living in? How do I locate things, say, like the quantum field? And any high school textbook has a diagram of the electromagnetic spectrum from the Hertzian plane, where you and I are sitting tonight, up to infrared, which is just above us, up to the light spectrum, which is above that again, then the ultraviolet, then the X-ray, then the gamma, and then infinite unknown. We have all come down through those six dimensions above this one. We are all still living up there. I think this is what the orb phenomenon tells us. And if we don't start to ask what the phenomenon of orbs tells us, and just keep on taking pictures, we would be like those physicians when the microscope was invented and for the first time were able to see chromosomes, for instance, in human blood. It would be as if they kept on looking at the specimens through the microscope and didn't go on to ask, what does this knowledge enable us to do in terms of treating disease and establishing health for people? So I think the orb phenomenon was extremely important to us, because anyone can take these pictures, even a child, preferably a child, and they can see that there are dimensions beyond the ones that we can see where you and I are still living. We cannot exist down here on the bottom rung of the ladder in the physical plane unless we are suspended by a body or a physical presence in the six dimensions above us, which comes from God. It's like hanging a garment in a closet, Eva, and expecting that the bottom layer of the garment will stay in midair on its own if it isn't held in position by the layers above it.
Right, downward causation, yeah.
Yeah. So all of us, every one of us, no matter how humble we are in the world, we are all living in those planes. And that is exactly the basis for what Jesus said when he said, you will do all the miracles that I did, and greater indeed than these will you do. It's in the Gospel of St. John. Because you and I have a presence in the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth, sixth, seventh plane. And the quantum field is the sixth plane. So we have a presence, you and I, everyone, that's living on that sixth plane. All we need to do is wake it up. And
right.
Then all of the miracles of creation will start to cascade down upon us.
Do you think that all of these levels are contained? I mean, it's resonance, right?
It's frequency,
yes. Okay, so that means all of those levels would have to be in us here at the moment. They're not up and down or left and right.
No, they're
there
not.
Here.
They're, I suppose the best way to put it is not up and down, because, you know, I don't like up and down, because that's where it has got us into all our the trouble in the past. We're thinking of God up there,
right,
and I'm down here. They're not. They're really within us. All these dimensions are within us. They're not out there, up there.
Right.
They're here. All we need to do is to, as you said, resonate the frequency to awaken them.
I want to go back to these questions about Jesus and Mary, because inevitably I'll get an email or something from somebody saying we didn't address it. Do you think they were married, and the issue about being born of a virgin? And
well,
the tomb.
What's that?
And the tomb, and the Rennes-le-Château, stuff that's going on at Rennes-le-Château.
Well, yes, you know, all of these are very complicated. I wrote an article when I met Bruce Burgess, the maker of that movie Bloodline, about Rennes-le-Château, whom I have great respect for. And it's very complicated. So if you want to know what I believe about the movie Bloodline or Rennes-le-Château and the alleged tomb of Mary Magdalene there, I would ask you, I'm not putting you off, it's just it's so difficult to answer these very complicated questions, you know, in a couple of minutes like we have. So look on my website, hamburgeruniverse.com, and look up that article. I can't remember what the title of that Bloodline was. When the movie came out, sometime about last May or June, July. And all of what I have to say about that is there. Now, the trouble is, you know, when you ask me, did they have this or did they have that? We, unfortunately, are now asking those questions out of the background of traditional Christianity. And some of those backgrounds are absolutely wonkers. They are off the wall. So in answering them, you have to first clarify the background. So, were Jesus and Mary Magdalene married? Let us address this issue. I have written an article about that in the last 6 months on that same website, and you have all the details there if you care to go to my website and look them up. Now, I would look at the New Testament, which nobody doubts. I mean, everyone that that's listening to us tonight knows what the New Testament is, and I'm sure most of them will rightly revere the New Testament. There are some things in the New Testament that give clues to us. I said earlier, you cannot approach a 3,000-year-old document and read it as if it were the morning newspaper. You cannot, likewise, approach any of the New Testament, which is roughly 2,000 years old, and read it as if it were the morning newspaper. It came as well, in addition to being that age, it came from a different culture than ours. And the people who first put the Gospels together, which was quite a long time after Jesus walked on this earth, they were Western in their mentality. They would have missed a lot of the stuff that was being put across in the Eastern mentality, which is how the Gospels were written. And I would refer you to some of those. For instance, when Jesus came to the house of Lazarus at Bethany, 3 miles outside Jerusalem, when a husband returned from a journey, a wife never went out to meet him. The rest of the family would go, but the wife waited until she was called to come. That is exactly what happens in that story in the Gospels. Jesus comes to the house of Lazarus at Bethany. The family goes out to meet him. Mary Magdalene does not go out to meet him. She's sent for, and then she comes out. As I said, the Western mindset people who put these Gospels together would not have realized what that signified in first century Eastern Judaism. In other words, they did not realize that this is exactly what a wife would do.
Right.
If you go to another incident, I'm going very quickly here because I know we have little time, but if you go to another incident, like when Jesus was being anointed with the nard and the precious ointment, I mean, he was anointed by Mary. In first century Judaism, there's absolutely no way that it would have been tolerated that a woman should touch a man like that unless she were that man's wife. So when that incident is told there, what is the text saying to me, without actually putting it in words like a Western mind would do? it's saying that this woman was his wife.
Right.
And there's several cases like that. So are you asking me, was Jesus married? I'm not going to the texts that were discovered in Egypt in 1946 at Nag Hammadi. I'm going to the New Testament, which no one's disputing. And I'm saying to you, if we had more time, we could go into this. Go to the website and look up the details. But I'm saying to you, are you asking me, were Jesus and Mary Magdalene married? I would have to say, on the evidence of the New Testament, it looks like they were.
I just wanted to raise the point that there's something there that people should think about.
Yes.
You know?
This, by the way, does not demean Jesus.
No.
There's no loss here. There's a gain. And, you know, the most oppressed group of people in human history have not been the blacks or the yellows or the grays or the greens. The most oppressed group in human history have been women.
What would it do
for women?
I go to the Orthodox synagogue occasionally next to my house. It's still that way today. Even a woman in the Orthodox synagogue would not do that to a man today.
Right. Oh, yes.
They would not. You know, they cover themselves fully. They don't. They sit on separate sides of the synagogue. They're still very Orthodox like that in their thinking. Anyway.
So that's a great experience for you to have that, because now you know the force of those sayings in the gospel about what Mary did and what Jesus did.
Yes.
You can see that it would have been intolerable for a woman who was not married to the person to do that.
Now, what about the fact of him being buried in the tomb and coming out, and then also the information about him being possibly buried in France?
Well, I know 8 places in the world that claimed the tomb of Jesus. I mean, every so often some place comes up. There's one in Japan, there's one in England, there's obviously now one in France, etc. You know, there's no shortage of tombs of Jesus. There was one came out there because of a movie was made last year about the Talpiot tomb, you know, outside Jerusalem. And there's one up in the north of Galilee in the Holy Land. There are many tombs of Jesus. So take your pick. But look, let me go back to something else. I do firmly believe that Jesus is a divine being, and that he's alive and well, that he ascended, and that his purpose here on this earth was to teach you and I and everyone else who was interested to do the same. He did not come to die for our sins. He did something much more wonderful than that. But unfortunately, his message was hijacked and turned on its head.
When did you realize all of this? I mean, you've obviously, and we've got about 7 or so minutes.
7 minutes to solve the mysteries of creation.
How did you, I mean, you obviously studied it your whole life. When did it click that it didn't, match up?
Well, you know, you may have noticed in some of the things you've asked and so forth, I am very cautious about saying anything unless I have evidence for it. I mean, I don't believe in speaking off the top of my head. I respect people's beliefs. I know they're in good faith. I know they've been told these things by people who should know better. And if I am suggesting a different point of view, it's because there is evidence for it, and I want to give you the evidence, not take it on my word. So, I mean, I was a student of theology for a very long time, and I had an opportunity to study all these Sumerian texts, all the ancient sources, both from East and West, from ancient times up till now, and I realized that we had got the message backwards. And when I realized that, I realized that Jesus is important as he ever is. I think that's one of the things I take issue with some people who discover tombs of Jesus here and there. They just want to say Jesus was not all he was cracked up to be. What I would say is that Jesus was far more than he was ever cracked up to be today, because he is the single greatest witness to the potential within every human being that there ever was. But they're losing that now because they say, oh, he was married, or oh, he was buried in this or that tomb, or whatever. That's not the point. The point is, did he ascend, and did he bring this message to teach us to take back our power? All the miracles I did, he said, you can do. Why don't we hear that preached about? It's in the inspired written word of God in the New Testament. Why don't we hear it talked about? I never heard it talked about in any church I was ever in. Well, we were told we were sinners and miserable and unworthy.
Going to hell.
And going to hell. Where did Jesus ever say you were going to hell? The only two words he ever used were Gehenna and Sheol in Aramaic and Hebrew. Gehenna, that was the rubbish dump outside Jerusalem where they used to burn all the garbage. Transport place. In fact, they used, in ancient times before Jesus, they used to practice the sacrifice of children there. And the other term was Sheol, which in Hebrew means a shallow grave, which, you know, would be a great disgrace for a person of the Jewish faith, because the jackals and hyenas would dig up your body and eat it, which was a great disgrace to have the corpse defiled in that way. So the only two words that Jesus ever used were Shehenna, Kehenna, and Sheol. And one time, when I had nothing better to do over a weekend, I looked up 49 English translations of the New Testament where Jesus spoke these words, and I wanted to see which of them translated them accurately or which translated them as hell. You know what? Out of the 49 translations, only two of them translated them as Gehenna and Sheol. The others translated them as hell, which, of course, as you know, in the Catholic and other traditions of Christianity, is a place of eternal torments where you go after death to be punished for your sins. Jesus never spoke about a hell of everlasting torment.
I could talk to you for hours.
I know, and maybe we should.
I'd love to. I mean, I could just talk to you for hours.
But the whole picture of Jesus has been more maligned than any figure in human history, and unfortunately maligned by the very people who are claiming to follow him.
So we've got about 2 or 3 minutes.
Oh, dear.
Your website is hamburgeruniverse.com, right?
Yes, and if anyone has any questions, obviously they can come to me from you, or if they want to go to my website and look at some of the orb pictures or read some of these articles that have a lot more information that we've been able to cover. My 3 DVDs are there, the one on the Hamburger Universe, which is the ways we think about God, which are so devastatingly bad, and the ways we think about Jesus, which is how Jesus became a Christ, the secret years in Egypt, India, and Tibet, and then the one on orbs clues to a more exciting universe. But if anyone wants to ask me a question or send me some more pictures or whatever, please feel very welcome to do that at hamburgeruniverse.com, hamburgeruniverse.com. I'd be very glad to hear from you.
All right, you got about 2-3 minutes. Is there anything you want to say in that short period of time?
Well, you asked me earlier about the virgin birth.
Yes.
Now, you know, Saint Paul, who is the one who wrote half of the New Testament, right, went to meet the brother of Jesus, James, at Jerusalem one time after Jesus had ascended. And Saint Paul, who wrote half of the volume of the New Testament that we have today, never mentions the virgin birth. Don't you think that if he was talking to James, the brother of Jesus, and stayed with him for 2 weeks, as he tells us, and such an extraordinary thing had occurred, that James might have mentioned it? Not a word. Furthermore, if you look back for the 2 or 3 centuries before Jesus, you will find 12 other individuals, I could name them if we had time, who were all born on the 25th of December, who were born in a stable, who had oxen breeding on them, who had shepherds, who had angels, who had a star, who were crucified and who rose again on the third day, and their followers ate a sacred meal of bread and wine commemorating their death. There's 12 other saviors of that kind. Am I downgrading Jesus by mentioning this? On the contrary, I'm just saying that in the second and third centuries, the whole message of Jesus became tied into those mystery religions.
Right.
And all of that stuff that you've mentioned, you know, virgin birth and born in the stable, etc., 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 has all to do with the mystery religions. and little to do with what Jesus actually taught. He did not come to die for our sins. He came for something much better than that.
It's not logical to me that somebody would have to die for you to make you...
Exactly. What kind of God would demand the death
exactly.
of his only son?
It's like giving my child to make sure that you go to church next week.
Exactly.
I mean, I
have said before, and people got very annoyed with me, if God demanded the death of his only son, he would be a sadist.
Yeah.
So that position of people who say that God demanded the death of Jesus for my sins, those people are atheists.
I tell you, and we're out of time, but I have to say this. You know, fundamentalists refuse to believe that the Bible didn't just appear.
Right.
They forget that people wrote that down.
Yes.
And did the best they could to understand the channeling that was coming in their head.
Right.
Or write the stories down that they witnessed. You know, it's not a magical book that appeared one day, I don't think.
No, I mean, the Bible is not a book. It's a library of books. I mean,
right.
Look how many of them. There's 67 books in the...
That's another thing. They don't get that there are pieces left out.
Right. Let me give you one story on Mary Magdalene.
We were going to get cut off, Mijo.
Are we?
It's 10:55 now.
Okay.
I'm going to call you tomorrow. We're going to reschedule you for a few months down the road.
Oh, great. Well, that'll be fine. Listen, thank you so much, Eva.
Oh, good night, and thank you so much for coming back.
We will look forward to meeting you again.
All right. Take care.
Thanks.
Good night.
Good night, listeners. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.